Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin, joined today by the only person here who doesn't think I'm a joke, Barrett Dudley, to discuss Season 4, Episode 7 of Succession, titled Tailgate Party, Barrett.
Tailgate Party.
It's the tailgate party. We'll decide at the tailgate party.
Yeah, we'll decide at the tailgate party.
Circle back at the tailgate party.
Yeah, we'll circle back at the tailgate party. Yeah, and good news for me, the only person that believes in you. I got the green light because I went and I talked to my woman about Oman.
And it's
all good. We're just going to walk straight through the airport.
That's huge.
Yeah, we just walk straight through.
You'll have government plates. You can park anywhere. You can drive right up on the sidewalk, Barrett.
So, yeah.
Wow. I'm glad you got that pitch done.
Yeah. It's the...
With the woe man.
What did we decide it was? It's the poor man's Saudi Arabia, rich man's Yemen.
Yeah. Before we get started, we've got a hot new batch of Succession-inspired merch on bolinmedia.com/shop, like this Kendall Logan Roy crossed out or underlined hat that I am wearing, as well as this Disgusting Brothers World Tour 2023 shirt that I am wearing, both of which you can see if you're watching on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles. But you'll see them on social media all week as well if you follow us, or you can just go now to check them out at bolinmedia.com/shop, which you should do immediately. Find a shape for yourself in this piping hot Succession-inspired merch at bolinmedia.com/shop. And don't just buy for yourselves. This merch makes the perfect gift for the big Succession fan in your life. You ready to dive into this thing?
Let's dive.
We start this episode with a cold open of Tom Wamsgans collecting a breakfast that his at-home chef has prepared and taking it to his wife, Shiv. See, that's the difference between us and the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do, you know, something nice for your partner, you've got to wake up a little earlier, go make the food yourself.
Right.
He just goes and collects it from the, gourmet chef that's in the kitchen.
It looks absolutely delicious.
It did. Not delicious enough for her to dig right into it.
She spurns it. That's the thing. They don't appreciate it because once you're there, you've taken it all for granted.
Oh, that's the problem.
Taking it for granted. That's the rub.
Indeed.
You know?
Yeah.
Money's wasted on the wealthy.
It is. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
Tom informs us that this is election eve and refers to himself as Father Sexmas, and has brought Shiv this the hot, fresh polling for the election. Jimenez, which is the Democratic presidential candidate, is up by 4 points.
Yeah.
And Mencken is the Republican presidential candidate that gets referenced throughout the episode and season.
It also sounds, we were wondering earlier in the season what happened to Gil. I think Gil's the VP nom.
Oh.
I believe, because he gets brought up a few times.
Multiple times, yeah.
And I think I caught that it's Jimenez and whatever that guy's last name is. I think it's Jimenez and Gil.
I think that makes sense.
Is the ticket.
Okay.
Which is how Nate is
very important.
Important and in the mix and still, you know.
Playing Kingmaker. Fuck yeah. Tom has brought Shiv a little party prezi for being such a hot piece of ass, such a foxy little minx, just to say he's really glad that they're hosting this party together. So the tailgate party, as it is called, or the election eve party, is going to be at their domicile. And the gift that he has brought her is a scorpion encased in glass, Barrett. You know, like it's silly. Like, I love you, but you kill me and I kill you.
And it's a paperweight. That's what that is.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting paperweight.
Yeah, like a polished, glass plexi thing.
Put this on your desk.
Yeah, you've seen them, right?
Yeah, hold down some papers.
You get something frozen in there, a bug or a snake or a scorpion or trinkets.
Yeah, it's like something you buy in the gift shop at the zoo.
Yeah. So this one's a scorpion.
Yeah.
Because I guess Shiv is a scorpion.
Yeah.
She'll sting you.
Uh-huh. She'll get you. So this little Tom and Shiv segment of the cold open obviously cues us up for a lot of the heavy moments to come in this episode.
Heavy they were.
What were your thoughts on this, Barrett? Would you ever gift your person a scorpion paperweight?
No, as much as I love my guy Tom.
Yeah.
This was a bad gift.
Not his best play. You know, he'd really, yeah, he'd kind of weaseled himself back in there.
He had. He really had.
They're having lots of sex?
Lots of sex. Things were looking up. And the you know, the thing that you can't do is give a jokey gag gift that is also an insult when you're in the throes of lots of sexy time. Of
yeah.
Lots of rebound sexy time.
Yeah, he's experiencing the benefits of a hormonal Shiv.
Yeah.
Who is pregnant. And he has completely wasted the momentum he has here with this terrible, terrible present.
Yeah. Shiv, I mean, and for her part, you know, she obviously, like, internalizes it and takes it in.
Yeah, she's able to kind of brush it off,
but
too.
But she brushes it off pretty nicely and, you know, says, yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, whatever. The next in this cold open, we see Kendall Roy meeting with his baby mama, Rava Roy, who I don't think we had seen yet this season, Rava.
Maybe not.
I think she'd been kind of shelved so far. It sounds like they're still getting a divorce because he approaches her and he's like, look, this is about legal stuff. I don't really have like the headspace for this right now or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rava, it's not about legal stuff. She informs Kendall that his daughter Sophie doesn't want to go to school because she's freaked out about the election. It's election eve, remember? So she's not even wanting to go to school today because she's scared of what's going to happen, I guess. And turns out over the weekend, someone wearing a racially tinged Ravenhead shirt pushed by her on the street. And this took a little bit of, like, I had to do some Googling. I was like, wait, so what? Because at first I thought they were saying that basically she got attacked by an angry lib who's like, your dad runs the alt-right news network, fuck you. But no. Mark Ravenhead is the ATN anchor who was accused of being an alt-right Nazi in season 2.
Yes.
So
the Hitler lover.
It just, she accidentally, or they she bumped into somebody who was wearing a Ravenhead shirt with a racially tinged quote on it,
mm-hmm,
that she was like, oh my God, my dad is a monster, basically, like, because he owns the network that this guy Ravenhead was working at, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also at Sophie's school, some kids have started an anti-ATN thing. And so that's the gist of it. Kendall and Rava get into it. She tells him she's been raising their daughter while he's been running a racist news organization. He tells her that she has no idea the things he's working on. Six continents, Barrett. He's breaking his back, and it's all for them and to make the world safe. It just seemed like a bit of an overreach there.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I thought this was the first scene and the first line that kind of framed up the themes of this episode, which we'll get into. But like, it's the first time in this episode, and there are many, where somebody says something, specifically one of the kids says something that would have come out of Logan's mouth.
Yeah.
And yet doesn't have the same tenor.
It right.
does not hit the same way. It is completely different. It's in a multitude of different ways. And so that echoed when he says that, you think about all the times Logan says in what's kind of, you know, a bullshitting tone, like, I do this all for my kids, right?
It's kind of like a Liv Soprano, like, I gave my life to my children on a silver platter thing, you know what I mean? But this is something that even, you know, pre-Succession, I just kind of remember picking up on as a kid growing up, that a lot of parents who are workaholics use this sort of excuse, like, I'm doing it all for the kids.
For the kids, right?
Obviously a bit of bullshit. But yeah, this, I thought you put that perfectly. This cold open really framed up the most important themes of the entire episode, although it felt a little odd right after you take it in and opening sequence, title sequence is rolling. You're just kind of like, what the hell? That was such a weird cold open. But really, they get into all of this throughout the course of the episode.
The other, just you mentioned the cold opens there. When I was rewatching season one earlier this year, the cold opens are, how should I put this? Very cold, in that they don't kind of like wrap up in a neat way and then like needle drop intro.
Right.
They kind of just end.
Yeah. Here's some information.
Here's some information.
Here's the title sequence.
Yeah. But it's like, so, you know, they're not, they have less of that like punchy CSI Miami, and now I drop the quip and rip the sunglasses off.
Yeah.
Cue the Who.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's more just like a scene that doesn't necessarily have like a hard stop ending or like a super, you know, needle droppy, impactful, like cutoff. It's just a scene and then move into the title sequence. And sometimes, and then I thought they kind of like over the course of seasons 2, 3, and then into 4, those have all felt like a little bit, you know, just sharper in the way that they do that, you know, run into the title sequence.
A little more polished.
A little more polished. But this one kind of felt old school in that way of where it's just like, yep, and that's the scene. Go title.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it, though.
So did I.
After the opening credits roll, we see Roman in the car. He's on the phone speaking with his, what does he call him, a rat fucker? He's asking, this person's digging up dirt on Mattson because, as you'll recall, the CE bros, Kendall and Roman, are attempting to destroy the deal their dead dad set up with Gojo and are exploring different ways to do so. He arrives, Roman does, at brunch to meet with his siblings to plan their dad's funeral. Shiv and Connor are already there. Connor has just returned from once again seeing their dead father's corpse. Says he woke up on the right side of the coffin today.
He's just hanging out at the morgue.
Yeah.
Or at the mortuary or wherever.
That's his way of dealing with the death.
Yeah. This also immediately answered a question that we asked last week. Are we going to deal with the funeral? Yes, here we are. And, you know, as we continue kind of trying to tap into the timeline, we're pretty day by day here.
Maybe, yeah, Kendall arrives last, and Shiv jokes that Waystar Jesus has arrived, mm-hmm. the man who's going to lead them to eternal life. And I don't think she would make that joke unless it was the morning after the Living Plus presentation we saw last week. So it's very day by day. Like, Shiv then gloats about the Democratic candidate leading in the polls, and Connor informs the rest of the siblings that the funeral is getting a little out of control because they're saying yes to all of Marsh's ideas. I have to assume the kilt is part of that. Plus the siblings, plus their dad's requirements, and Connor is concerned the funeral could turn into a 3-day grief-a-thon. So outside of trimming the funeral down to a tight 90, they need to decide who's going to be the main speaker at their dad's funeral. And Connor is going to let them have a think and says, I got to go do the digital battle bus, but we'll nail it down at the tailgate party. So then after Connor steps away, Kendall and Roman broach the subject of inviting Nate Cifrelli, Shiv's former lover, who she kind of had an affair with, right, mm-hmm. during her relationship with Tom earlier seasons.
Yeah, and Tom kind of makes a small scene at their wedding at the end of season 1.
Right.
Where he kicks Nate out.
Yeah.
Does a fun, you know, makes him pour the wine back into the bottle. Really, really big dicks him.
Yeah.
And kind of gains a little bit of the power back.
For a
short period of time. But yeah, that's all season 1 stuff. Yep.
Yeah. So they want to invite Nate to the tailgate party as a political play. And Roman congratulates Kendall on the Living Plus presentation, apologizes in that little line from Roman acknowledging that, like, he left his brother out to dry to mm-hmm. do the whole presentation himself. And then he says that they need a plan B, basically, if they can't chase Mattson out of town with the price. So plan B for Kendall and Roman, which they are sharing with Shiv here, is going regulatory with DOJ, FTC, FCC, and EU. And I mean, look, I don't know a whole lot about the specifics of what exactly that means, what that entails, but my thought was just that there are monopoly related, like, antitrust reasons that they could maybe blow this up.
I'm sure you've heard in the news media, like, certain congressional groups and sets of people that, like, basically want to, quote unquote, break up big tech.
Right.
Like, essentially,
like, they have, like, too much power.
Essentially, like, Alphabet, Apple, Amazon and Meta, like just have too much power.
Too much influence. Yeah.
Nate kind of says it later when he is talking to Mattson, like, hey, we're concerned that you're just going to, like, data mine us all to death and, like,
right.
that this is just, it's going too far. So, naturally, as the show does, kind of reflecting, like, real concerns that, like, big tech has too much power, too much control. They're too wealthy. There's only a few of them at this point that own kind of everything. And that's where they're going with regulatory is, like, you know, can we kind of, like, can we scare the Swede a little bit into thinking that, you know, maybe, like, the, like, Congress won't even let this happen, or that they'll kibosh the deal, or that if it does go through, then they'll put all these you know, regulations and kind of
to make it
governors
hell for him.
On the big company to make it very difficult to succeed and keep printing money.
The thing that popped up in my mind is like with, you know, even with TikTok, right? Congress has been exploring ways to potentially shut down TikTok in the United States for some time now because they feel like it has too much influence on American day-to-day life almost is a big part of the argument. It's addictive. People are spending too much time on it.
It's also the China factor.
It's tied in with the Chinese Communist Party, and they don't want them to have that type of reach into the United States.
Yeah.
And if, like, you know, the company that owns TikTok was trying to buy the company that has Fox News under its belt,
right,
it would be a massive concern in terms of national security. So after Roman and Kendall walk away, Shiv immediately calls Mattson, tells him the brothers are going to go regulatory and that he needs to crash this tailgate party to counter what they are attempting to do, right? Then Shiv sexts with Tom about their apparent orgasm Olympics from the night prior, and Shiv playfully says she's sorry if she broke Tom's dick last night.
Yeah.
And so next we go to Tom, who is responding to that text with, "Nope, still rock hard." And then Tom presumes to begin a mass firing via Zoom, which he says he's already done a couple of times this week, and sometimes, honestly, it just makes him cry. Tom then hands the job of actually laying off all of these people to his colleague, Gregory Hirsch, who reads a prepared statement explaining that they are restructuring the ATN operation internationally, and that the people on this call are part of the unlucky group being let go. And this really directly hearkened to, like, a lot of the, you know, news over the last couple of years about CEOs and executives botching the shit out of these mass firings via Zoom and the like.
Yep.
Yeah. Life imitates art. Mm. Or is it the reverse? Both.
Who's to say?
Yeah. But if it is to be said, so it be.
So it be.
After seeing some confusion in the chat, Greg says he obviously can't take questions on the call. It seems like everyone on the call is muted, and he's just able to just rattle this off and then hang up, right? But he says, but this is a very sad day. It was great. So then at their triplex, as it is called, Tom and Shiv are preparing for the tailgate party. I had never heard this word before, triplex, but I figured it's like when your place is too big to be called a duplex or a condo. So I Googled it, and Google informed me that it's three separate residential units incorporated into one structure. So essentially, they have taken three different floors of this, like, tower that they're in, and that is their one home.
Yeah.
Tom is very tired because Shiv will not stop banging him. And that is a running theme throughout the episode, which actually does really come into play because you feel like he's so frayed at the edges that he can't hold it together. And that's when they have their big blow up, right? So Shiv tells Tom that Mattson is now coming to the party to thwart her brothers. She gives him, like, the specifics of it. Shiv is certainly telling Tom a lot of information. Tom knows that she is a double agent screwing her brothers, which is a very important piece of information for the remaining three episodes, you have to assume. Because Tom is a guy that has been aligning himself and attempts to throughout the course of this episode with Mattson, right? But Shiv is giving him information about what's happening and who's playing who and the fact that she's screwing them all.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the episode, Tom is in a very different place than he was at the beginning of the episode. So you just have to figure, like, Shiv will regret all the oversharing she has done with her sort of estranged husband. She also tells him, speaking of being estranged, that Nate will be coming to their home for this party because of his connections to Gill and the Democratic presidential candidate Jimenez. And similarly to the way Shiv played off the scorpion at the beginning of the episode, Tom plays it off like he doesn't care. He swallows the load, if you will. And you can just tell, I mean, it's like the first 20 minutes of this thing, you're just like, oh boy. The tension is building. The pieces are being put on the board for this all to explode. So at the election party that night, the brothers begin, Kendall and Roman, begin spreading regulatory anxieties amongst the crypto-fascists, right-wing nutjobs, venture capital Dems, and centrist ghouls. And
Logan's, what did they say? Logan's ideal like demo or target demo was wide ranging.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
And because Logan is the one who's invited all of these people, right? Like the invites had gone out before his death. Remember, it's only been 5 days or whatever.
This sounds like something that Logan has done multiple election cycles
over and
in
over,
the past,
yeah.
Right? This tailgate party, it's nicknamed this. And like the idea is that they have, as Tom says later, you know, like 40 of the most influential people in the world kind of convening on this location for a pre-election eve kind of like fun and games party. And I thought one of the really good things that this episode in specific kind of, you know, hammered on a little bit, and it's something that's kind of lived within Succession throughout, but it's like when you're this rich, who wins does not matter. You can align yourself here, you can align yourself there, you can be any one of these different, you know, brands of people, whether you're a venture capitalist Dem or a centrist ghoul. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter for you.
Yeah. It was really interesting to see the way they set this up, where it felt like, remember the episode where they go and pick the Republican candidate?
Yeah.
Where they have that meeting of the wealthy and powerful who are essentially picking. I thought this was more of a look into, you know, the message here being basically, the voters don't decide. The 40 people in this room at this party decide. And they're not even all on the same political party. They're all over the spectrum.
Yeah.
But they're all here to be pitched on what makes the most sense for them, right? And then they all run out as the thought leaders in America and influence what the outcome will be, sort of. That was like the underlying tone of this whole kind of party to me.
Okay, but you think they could have you think the goal was to send out that messaging like on day one like or day of the election basically?
It sounded like night of the like election eve, uh-huh. Like as the party was going on, that they would sort of be pulling strings, you know, based on what they were hearing or seeing.
Yeah,
and that the next morning would be when these people would sort of exert their influence or whatever. But also, yeah. I think your point was a big piece of it, which is that to the people in this room, it doesn't entirely matter. They're all the wealthy and powerful still, no matter who wins the election.
Yeah, and the only thing that matters to them is retaining influence,
right?
Essentially.
And setting up deals.
And wielding it, yeah. And setting up deals and doing all of that. But like I thought, like, you know, the big one that stood out to me is when Kendall is kind of like, they're talking, he's talking to Roman about the Connor thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, don't we kind of like, but kind of fuck making, right? Like we don't like this guy, like democracy, yada, yada. And then Roman just drops like a one-line sentence like, oh, well, it might be good to like be in good with him if he wins. And Kendall's like, oh, yeah, okay.
I see you.
I see it. Yeah, I see it. I see it.
You go work the Nazis, I'll work the libtards.
So just like, it's just like, yeah, sure, democracy and like the guy with the maybe like more palatable views, sure, that'd be great, but also Mencken might win, in which case, well, that works too.
Yeah, it makes sense that they still keep that in play.
Yeah, we'll keep that in play. And that's like that whole theme just kind of like runs throughout this.
Yeah.
That, you know, like there's a guy, Shiv would obviously like Jimenez and Gil to win, Roman more on the Mencken side, but like at the end of the day, they're all still going to be friends.
Right, right. Which Kendall even says in his speech to these people, right? Tom tells Greg that Mattson is coming. And that's what going to be what Tom focuses on, getting in the good graces of the Swede, right? And Tom suggests that Greg do the same unless he is truly aligning himself with the dumpster brothers, he calls Kendall and Roman. But Greg says...
Kenro?
Yeah. Greg says he would like to feather that bed, but Mattson doesn't like him. That he's not into his particular brand of him. And so he is Team Kenro.
Team Kenro.
And I think it is probably fair to say that Tom will also be Team Kenro starting with episode 8. Mm. That is my assumption based on the way things unfold in this one. But Roman tells Kendall that Mencken's team called. Roman gets a phone call from Mencken's team. They're requesting that Connor drop out of the race because his 1% is throwing things off. And we had kind of discussed whether or not this would come into play, sort of like a Ross Perot situation,
if you
want to see like historically where something like this has happened, where a third-party candidate really jacks up the numbers for one of the two major parties.
I mean, he's polling 4, 5, 6% in Alaska.
It's exploding, you know,
in Alaska.
So Roman approaches Connor and informs him of this, and Connor questions why he would drop out after all the blood and treasure he's expended. He refuses. So Roman hits him with the bargaining chip that he has been authorized to put out there, an ambassadorial appointment in Mogadishu, Somalia, which is famously where like the Somali pirates hail from, when we used to hear about that in the news all the time. Connor says it's a little bit car bomb-y and requests the UN instead. That's a little more his vibration, Barrett.
Yeah.
I thought this was also a really cool look into, like, you kind of always wonder, you know, how do all these people end up with these jobs, like ambassadors and the like, because we have them all over the world in all these different arenas, right? There's like there's a ton of people in these governmental positions. This is one of the ways that realistically they get to those spots. They're and you see this in like Netflix's House of the Cards
or
House of Cards,
or even
me.
Veep, or literally or Veep, like yes. any like political yeah. deep dive. Like it's all, you know.
Deal-making, handshaking. Closed-door type situations, and I thought this was a really cool look into how, like, a goofball like Connor Roy could end up in a position of actual influence on some level, even if it is in Mogadishu. So Connor, up front, is not interested in Mogadishu and sends him to go ask, you know, what else? What you got anything better? Kendall then gives his big speech to welcome all their guests. He thanks Shiv for hosting, no mention of Tom, which just, you know, basically a massive cascade of Tom emasculation occurs over the next 45 minutes or so. Kendall also addresses the lack of an elephant in the room that is his father, Logan Roy. And he requests a moment of silence in his memory. So, of course, that's when the Swedes stomp in with Mattson in front, and Kendall... and Roman both did not know he was coming, obviously. It's like this very awkward moment where he's like, oh, big VIP in the house. Kind of moves on, is able to smooth it over and kind of play it correctly. But then he goes outside. Kendall and Rome are both like, what the fuck? Shiv comes out and does a pretty terrible job of also acting shocked. And then Kendall and Roman put Shiv on Operation Nuke the Luke, which is obviously ironic because Shiv is Mattson's mole. Right. So they don't even realize they're just like giving, they're helping her help him. And
people helping people.
But there was just too much peanut butter between Ken and Rome and Mattson, you know, so they had to get Shiv on it. Too much peanut butter, Barrett.
I don't know what that one means.
I don't think anybody does.
Things were sticky?
Yeah. I don't know why peanut butter? I have no idea. But speaking of nutrition, today's episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens. Why take a bunch of different things when you can mix just one scoop of powder and water once a day? Athletic Greens' flagship product, AG1, was designed with ease in mind so you can live healthier and better without having to do too much. It's the healthiest thing you can do in under a minute for the deal-making media mogul in your life or the everyday grind boy or girl. AG1 has been part of millions of mornings since 2010, and in my time using it, I've noticed an increase in energy, mood support, and better overall digestion. The goal of Athletic Greens is to make it easier for you to live your best life. If you want better gut health, immune system support, hate taking a bunch of different pills and vitamins every day, and want something that tastes great, AG1 has you covered. If you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/dragon. That's athleticgreens.com/dragon to support our show and your body at the same damn time. Like a real executive baller should. athleticgreens.com/dragon.
Dragon.
Go today. So Tom approaches Mattson and continues complaining about being tired. Mattson asks him if he's more of a hands-on or an overview guy at ATN. And Tom asks back, let me answer your question with a question. Which one would you value more highly? Which is just like the most blatant absurd move you can pull in a situation like this.
There were a lot of laugh out loud moments in this episode, but Mattson's line reading of really?
Really?
Was one of my favorites. Yeah.
Super good one.
Very like Arrested Development, like her?
It reminded me of later in the episode when Greg's like, you know, but you gotta do what you gotta do. And Mattson's like, but do you? Yeah. Shiv then approaches as well as Greg. So it's like this four person conversation. Shiv, Greg, Tom, Mattson. And Mattson says that they have a really, really nice place here and asks who will get to keep it in the divorce, which really harshes the vibes. And then Mattson calls Greg Gary. which I loved. Mattson's blood brick recipient and head of comms, Ebba, is at this party. Turns out she has a bit of social anxiety, Barrett.
Things are getting spicy with the Ebba sitch.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Not good.
Not great.
Mattson's number two, Oscar, is moonbeamed on edibles, as Mattson puts it. And the Swede squad is really eclectic.
They're not what they were, you know, kind of all made out to be, are they?
Yeah.
They're a little, they're falling short of that, of the rundown full of Olympians and just 25-year-old wunderkinds.
Yes, I would say they definitely are. Maybe it's a bit of a fish out of water situation here, not on their ground, but they do seem a bit awkward. So Connor and his lawyer, or his advisor, I don't know who this guy is, Connor's dude who has the insane Yosemite Sam facial hair.
Love this guy.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he's yeah.
I want to say, I feel like he's from...
He's been in stuff.
Yeah, okay.
But he was notably...
The Prestige, though? Was he in The Prestige? Somebody
maybe?
Help me out. I think he might have been.
I liked his look has changed a little bit in this episode. He's looking a little like he's made a little bit of money with the con dog.
Okay.
And he's in a more tailored suit. He's less professorial. He's still got like the wild facial hair and hair, but he's in like a very sharply tailored suit, I thought, which was just kind of notable. And maybe it's just the party, but also maybe he's getting a little taste of the good life. Everybody that gets close to it, man, they want to grab on. They want that, you know, you want that private chef bringing you
a little
nice egg scramble with green onion placed just so.
Got to get your piece, Barrett.
In the AMs. Along with your athletic greens, of course.
Of course. So Connor and that guy inform Roman that Mogadishu is a no-go. Roman tells Khan that Mankin's people are willing to talk Slovenia or Slovakia, but Connor is a no on the slows.
He's a no on the slows.
And Connor suggests after South Korea comes up, and Roman is like, that's a top 10 GDP, like there's no way. He suggests maybe North Korea, because you don't know. Nobody knows, Barrett. He could open it up like Nixon did with China.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knows what's going on back there, so... just an insane idea from Connor, but Roman tells Connor they're not going to put him anywhere with nukes, and Connor says he's insulted. He doesn't think he wants to go anywhere that doesn't have nukes, and Roman asks him how he likes Oman, the poor man's Saudi Arabia or rich man's Yemen, and Connor says he has to check and see what his woe man thinks about Oman. And from there, we go to Mattson.
Connor swiftly stealing every scene he's in this episode.
Like, yeah, I mean, he's had a great season, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of the, like...
He's throwing fastballs.
Season four has been the best of every character we've ever been introduced to. That's the thing about it that's so amazing.
Yes, and it's crazy that you take, like, the effects of taking Brian Cox out of the show, who's obviously an incredible performer, and like missed from just his general presence, but it is letting everybody else just like step up to the plate and just like smash homers, and it's been awesome.
Yes, it's been amazing. Mattson talks with Nate and Shiv to get you know, I think the vibe was that like he's trying to get the backing of the Democratic Party, that essentially Nate has the high powered Democratic politician's ears. And that obviously he wants this deal to go through. He doesn't want there to be any regulatory issues. He's trying to give a good impression to this guy, so he'll report back that Nate will report back.
And this is him, like, you know, so much of the show is kind of written in code, but like this is the counter. This is him countering the regulatory stuff. Is like getting an ear with Nate, you know, getting hit this guy's ear and kind of like getting to tell his own side of the story. And kind of let it be known how his, you know, how his side would basically sweeten the pot, like the benefits of letting this deal go through, et cetera.
Right. In the case of the benefits, it's that he wants to drastically change things up at ATN. He wants to fire some of the top people like Tom, which Nate directly calls into question. He's like, oh, Tom. And Shiv just kind of shrugs like, yep. But that would be good if you're wondering, like, what, you know, the benefit for Nate and the Democratic Party is that ATN is a heavily right-leaning network, that the, you know, inference could be that if the Swede takes over, it will become less so a problem for them as the opposite, the opposing party. So, but also just kind of crazy to see Shiv openly acknowledging the professional demise of her husband here as a part of the deal, right? And especially considering where things have been with them, where we kind of thought they were patching it up, like had some good momentum in terms of Shiv Tom, but it's kind of falling apart here. So next, Kendall talks with Nate, and these two have a much closer relationship than I thought, than I realized, I guess.
There is, okay, this is mentioned either in season one or season two, but somewhere along the line, there is a note dropped in about how Nate and Kendall knew each other.
Right.
They may have even gone to college together or something like
that. Something like that, yeah.
But they are friends from another. Actually, I think Stewie is the one that went to college with Kendall, maybe. But
yeah.
He has a relationship with Nate from something as well, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but. But they know each other, and that's clearly brought back into play here.
Like, at some point, they were clearly very close.
Pretty close, yeah.
And, so they kind of get into it. Kendall tells Nate.
By the way, Nate, taller than I realized.
Mm.
Kendall, Jeremy Strong, is a pretty short guy. I think he's, like, right around 5'8". And Nate has, like, solid, like, 3-4 inches on him, it looked like, when they were kind of walking together. I just always kind of, he always struck me as a smaller dude.
Me too.
Yeah.
Huh. Maybe that's just how small Logan
Kendall
or Kendall is. Yeah. Yeah.
He also could just be like a slender guy.
Sure.
Small in frame.
Oh, sure, hon. Oh, sure. So Kendall tells Nate that he thinks...
You don't want to keep just discussing the shapes of people's bodies on the show?
His physique. Kendall tells the taller-than-we-thought Nate that he thinks they can be really good for the Democrats, basically. Like... He gives him an even more intense version of the pitch that Mattson did.
Kind of saying,
like, look, the deal with Gojo is headed to the woodshed, and there might be regulatory issues. Mattson has extreme political positions and Holocaust jokes. Those things aren't good.
Yep.
And eventually it leads to, like, the direct promise or, you know, deal he's trying to make with him is Kendall promises him that the Democrats will get a better ride in their first 100 days in office than they would otherwise if they will commit to this regulatory questioning, if they'll kind of
help the government do the deal.
Yeah,
and then Kendall will give them a smooth 100 days on their network.
Yeah. So it seems like Nate is sort of open to that, and he says basically, like, I'm going to go make some calls and I'll report back. Then Shiv meets with Mattson and Kotchek to let him know he's doing pretty well schmoozing so far, Kotchek just being one of their rooms, right, that they've set up. And Shiv asks him basically to promise her a very, 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 three varies, significant role if she's going to continue assisting him with the acquisition. And Mattson doesn't really promise her anything. He's just kind of like, he's like, can I think on it? And she's like, no. And he's like, well, I'm gonna. Let's circle back in a bit, right?
Did you get the impression here that she was asking for CEO?
Perhaps. Yeah.
That's what it felt like to me, because this felt kind of like the final, you know, these kids, all three of them, just still clambering on top of each other, kind of trying to reach the top of the hill and just kicking each other back down it. And this kind of felt like her play here, like the moment where she is getting back on Kendall and Roy for the perceived cutting her out.
Roman. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it makes sense. She certainly seemed like she was asking for the highest possible position.
So it felt CEO-ish. Now it seems like Mattson would be CEO. So again, maybe it just means that she's in the C-suite, like on that executive level like that. But definitely this was the play. Here,
yeah.
The big play.
She shoots her shot and it doesn't seem to go particularly well. I mean, he wasn't like...
He didn't say no.
No, but...
But he didn't say yes.
He just kind of leaves the room without having to commit to anything. And then when they get back out there, he's like, I'm going to go take 5 and then I'll come back and continue schmoozing with the douchebags and dickheads or whatever he says. And as we know, he doesn't really take 5. He kind of like goes to the, as he calls it, the kids' table and just like rips a vape the rest of the night. So anyway, I just didn't think that. I thought Shiv like kind of shot a shot and he was kind of like, well, yeah, you know, maybe.
It was vague. It was vague.
Yeah.
I didn't feel bad about it. I felt, but I didn't feel great about it.
Yeah. Kendall tells Greg to get Mattson basically as fucked up as he can, like get him a blunt or something stronger and point his dick in the direction of some fissile material, he says. Just trying to get Greg to help this, you know, stir the pot, throw Mattson off course, make him look like a lunatic. And this is when Roman is informed by his rat fucker that Mattson has been creeping on Ebba, sending her blood, which we knew about, obviously, but also bits of hair and maybe some other things, which we didn't know about. And you can tell, like, you know, Roman and Kendall are pleased that this dirt digging worked and they've got something on this guy. But they also, it doesn't create like quite as explosive of a moment as I thought it would right there immediately. It kind of takes a minute here. We get to it. Mm-hmm. Nate ends up returning to Kendall after talking with his people and informs him that he has to leave, that he's got to kind of back out, back down, that it doesn't look kosher to be rubbing shoulders with Kendall. There's another guy there that's also part of the same regime, the Democratic Party, that's apparently sort of ratted on Nate for what he's, you know, been doing here. And Kendall promises him he can make prime time safe for them. And Nate says he doesn't feel comfortable with the tenor of the conversation because it is very, you know,
bribey,
wink, wink, illegal. That he's like, look, you guys throw a wrench in the regulatory side of this,
and I will
shift the political direction of our network in your favor for 100 days. But Nate goes so far as to say that he isn't Gil and Kendall isn't Logan, and that's a good thing. And he tries to kind of leave it on like a non-offensive note, like, you know, we're buddies, we had this conversation, but I got to get the fuck out of here for professional reasons. This is not being smiled upon the way I thought it would be.
Yep.
So we don't really know where that ends up with Nate. And then he's gone. Greg approaches the Swedes in an effort to execute on Kendall's wishes, and Oscar blows vape smoke in his face, calls him a fucking hanger-on and a fucking dingleberry, which were both very funny lines and accurate. Mattson jokingly fires Oscar, then says he would like to fire Ebba, but he can't because she has a sort of tenure, because they've mingled. It's all extremely inappropriate. And like you can tell, they're getting kind of faded, because they're saying all this to like cousin Greg,
yeah.
you know, who's a dingleberry, and they don't seem to give too much of a shit that he's right there listening. But Greg's like, I can help. Hell, I'll fire her if you want. I'll fire her right now. And he even says he has recent experience in this arena, right? Which we saw. It's not a lie. He's been just offing people in mass like it's nothing. And Ebba gets upset with this and storms off. She doesn't like the jokes. And Kendall is like looking down on all of this. He sees that all unfold. And so Kendall and Roman approach Ebba to like check in with her, make sure she's okay on a human level, you know. And Ebba tells them, basically, look, Mattson is not who he appears to be. We built his whole rep. He's not even a real coder. Someone just gave him a box of tech, and he took it to market, which makes it sound like it's, you know, the whole genius thing.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't really, nothing about this was genius. Like, somebody else was a genius, and he was able to go turn it into something that made a lot of money,
yeah.
but that he wasn't necessarily the guy who built this, right? Yeah. Ebba then says that she'll be out in February anyway, and Roman's like, is this because of the blood bricks, you know? But she's like, no, it's not that. It's India. We're like, what? It turns out Mattson has been basically doubling his metrics in India in an effort to severely boost his value, right? Like,
he's cooking the books,
he's
Ross.
Fudging the numbers,
Barrett. He's fudging the numbers.
Man, it's
big. Quick note on Greg. These guys joke, Oscar and Mattson, about like how he's basically like, oh, you're not a good person, are you? You're a bad guy,
yeah.
bad guy. And Greg is just kind of like a pig rolling in shit a little bit.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I've gotten... It's not like a full heel turn yet, I would say, in this season, but they're kind of like, I feel like they've scraped the paint away on him a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
And like he is very you know, almost more than anybody, like we always kind of knew that he was, you know, putting his foot in the door and was gonna rip the thing off until he was inside,
right?
But just like the depths that he'll kind of sink to, like,
oh, he's a scumbag.
He's very yes, and just in a more like because he's at on the lowest one on the totem pole, it's like in the it's in the rawest way compared to everybody else.
Yeah, he has to be real cold.
Everybody here, right, is pretty scummy in their own way, shape, or form.
Right.
A lot of shapes, actually. A lot of shapes.
They find a lot of different shapes.
But I think, Greg, they've just really kind of like made like the raw kind of id picture of that in this season, where he'll just kind of like, he'll just do fucking anything to make sure he stays on and stays valuable and keeps climbing.
Oh, yeah. Very, very good at climbing, this guy. Chaos is a ladder. So Shiv continues demoralizing Tom in front of their guests, attempts to get him to like tone down on ATN's misinformation campaign about the election. They kind of allude to the fact that as the Democrats are polling well, that ATN is out there smearing those numbers and saying they're sort of nonsensical, which obviously mirrors what, you know, occurred in our real life here in America. And Shiv brings up this O'Malley firebombing of a campaign office in Phoenix, which I loved this because basically they're saying there's this extremist group, the O'Malleys. I don't know why they're what that is supposed to be like a, you know, mirror to, but or a parallel to in reality.
Is the group the O'Malleys?
Yeah.
Or is the guy, or is the office that was firebombed the O'Malley's office?
No, O'Malley's is the bat. They're the group. Okay. This violent group.
Okay.
And they firebombed a campaign office in Phoenix. And then Tom's counter to that is the, you know, spin, which is like, no, it was two firecrackers taped together. And this is always the way it is with this political shit, right? You get these two versions now in America, the left version and the right version, and they're always so fucking different. And depending on what the accusation is or the thing that's occurred, somebody is trying to spin it one side or the other to make it not look as bad as it is. And there's always an excuse. There's always like, so on one side, in this particular instance, you've got the left screaming, the O'Malleys are out here. They're a violent terrorist group. They've attacked this campaign office. And then the counter argument is, it was two firecrackers taped together. It was an accident. Nobody meant to burn down the campaign office. It was great. Kendall and Roman approach and they ask to speak to Shiv alone so they can talk to her about this Mattson situation in India. And Kendall says, I fucking knew he was a bullshitter. I'm telling you, new money. You got to hold those fresh bills to the light. And again, they're giving Shiv this incredibly, I mean, in this case, I don't know that it necessarily helps her strategically. It's just more of like a oh shit moment for Shiv. Like she's clearly very shaken by what they tell her. But it's just wild to see like Kendall and Roman have no idea that she's playing both sides. They have not figured this out or gotten a whiff of it at all. And they're pulling her in just like she's still with them and telling her directly, like, we just got this huge break that Roman's rat fucker came up with this information or that led to us
that
being able to talk to Ebba.
Yep.
That led to more information. And Ebba squealed, basically. But yeah, the point here is, I mean, if you were a little confused by this, if Mattson's value is inflated by phony subscriber numbers in India, then there is absolutely no way this deal goes through.
He does not, as they say, have the juice.
Exactly.
To get to the to the 192 number or whatever it
which we can get more into in a moment. But if you've got dogs like Barrett and I, you probably hope they'll live forever or at least more forever. And if that's the case, you better not treat your dogs like Tom and Shiv treat their dog Mondale. Use today's sponsor, Maeve, instead. If you're like us, you want the best for your dogs. Maybe you feed them kibble recommended by a vet or a fresh food diet. But did you know that these are often low in protein, high in carbs, and are the leading cause of weight, mobility, dental, and skin conditions? That's where Maeve comes in. Your dog is biologically primed to digest and absorb key nutrients from an unprocessed, low-carb, high-protein, raw meat diet, and Maeve's raw food diet is formulated to meet your dog's needs. Maeve raw food for dogs, formulated by PhD veterinary nutritionists with real human-grade ingredients you can name just by looking at them. Plus, it's bite-sized and ready for your dog to eat right out of the bag. No mess, no prep, just open, pour, and enjoy. I've got four dogs. They're an incredibly important part of my family, so I want them to have the best. I'm sure you do too. Dogs need unprocessed, high-protein, low-carb diets that kibble and fresh foods don't deliver. Maeve is a protein-rich, raw food for dogs that's just as easy as kibble. It's supplemented for 7 essential health benefits, including gut health, immune function, oral hygiene, skin and coat health, hip and joint health, mental health and anxiety, and growth and early development. People love Maeve. They have over 1,000 five-star reviews. and their dogs love them too, especially notorious picky eaters. Make the switch to Raw today. Right now, Mave is offering $40 off your first order at meetmave.com/dragon. That's meetmave, MAEV.com/dragon. MEETMAEV.com/dragon to receive $40 off your first order. Once more, that's meetmave.com/dragon. So, back in the vape circle, Mattson is super impressed by Greg's 100 scalps in 3 days, his skill for mass firing people. And Mattson seems genuinely impressed with Greg. Oscar calls him a butcher with a smile, and you kind of already touched on this, so we don't have to get further into it, but it was very much like this raw moment for Greg, where this guy has got the killer instinct.
He maybe did feather the bed.
Yeah, very true. He really kind of does here. And it takes me back to that moment with Logan and Kendall, where he tells him, you've got to be a killer. You're not a killer. Well, Greg is kind of becoming a killer, right?
Yeah,
in his own right. Now, he's not vying for the crown, but he's making his way up the ladder and putting himself in a very good position here, where he is Team Kenro, but now he has also impressed Mattson, and he impressed Mattson while doing the bidding of Kendall. So it was like a double win. This was a huge episode for Greg.
Big moment.
Shiv comes up and grabs Mattson to call him out on the situation with his numbers in India. And Mattson cops to the numbers being a little bit bullshit and says they discovered a metrics error that has overstated their subs in India to the degree that if there were two Indias, it would make more sense. So he doubled them. And Shiv informs him that because it is a stock and cash deal, that the Waystar board would be well within their rights to pull out. And this is where you really get the detail on like how this falls apart for Mattson if this information gets out. If it turns out he does not have, as Barrett put it, the juice that he has been implying with his metrics, with his numbers, with regard to India, which, as we all know, is one of the most populous countries in the world. That would be a massive issue for all of these stockholders and board members of Waystar who are getting a 50-50 cash stock deal here. The stock is going to be worth significantly less than it was thought to be if Mattson's stock tanks, if Gojo stock tanks because they've been inflating their numbers in India. So it would make this whole deal fall apart. And it's not like maybe that could be a problem. It's a definite. This would screw everything up for Shiv, everything up for Mattson. And he's trying to pull off the whole, like, well, fuck it, I buy this other whale and everything gets too crazy and convoluted to notice that I've fudged these numbers and everything will be fine, right? Yep. And just, like, sweep it away with money, basically. But you can tell he's like, I know it's bad. I know it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like, he acknowledges it, but at the same time, I think he's got so much bravado and he's so rich at this point and, like, removed from reality that it doesn't really rattle him the way it should. Mm-hmm. But Shiv, you can see, is very, very rattled by this entire situation. This is when Roman approaches Jerry and attempts to smooth things over with her, saying that the firing her thing wasn't real. And he tries to apologize, but she says she is done. She informs Roman that she wants money, eye-watering sums of money, hundreds of millions of dollars. She has retained personal reputation management, and if she ever feels anyone is undermining the narrative she lays out any time in the next 5 years, she will sue and go public with all of Roman's genitalia photography. We wondered if this would come back up.
Yeah, we sure did.
Jerry has done the thing we all feared she would do if you're worried about Roman's long-term success
viability,
here.
Success,
he is in a deep hole that I am not sure he can dig himself out of. Like, when she threw out, like, I want eye-watering sums of money, I was like, oh, Jerry's about to cash a fat check. And then she was like, hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, just to put that in perspective, like, Roman might only be worth $2-4 billion. Like, this would be a significant chunk of his total value.
Yeah, although I think she wants it from the company.
Which, I don't even know how they would swing that. Like,
man, it's a package. She talked about how she's already like laid out the paperwork with Katarina.
You're right. Yeah. This is a way to get that money without her having to say why.
Yeah. And basically she's like, oh, you fired me? Okay, fine. I'm done. And I will take, you know, my Carl-esque package for, or you know, my triple Carl.
Yeah.
Basically. and I'll take my, you know, inordinate sum of money to be let go in my package. And if you don't give me that, then I'm just going to drop the D-picks.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting she said she'd retained personal reputation management, yeah, because it sounds like she's going to also force their hand to make this as sweet-sounding as possible,
totally.
Right?
Yep.
Like mutual terms, she's getting
paid
out.
She can go get another job.
Right, she's getting paid out a fuckload of money. Yeah, there's no probably non-compete.
Non-compete, yeah.
All that shit's out the window, so... yeah, huge, huge moment here between Jerry and Roman, and she closes it by saying, I could have got you there, but no. Nope. And she just fucking walks away, and Roman is deeply, deeply screwed. So he starts to melt down pretty immediately. He's like, I'm scrambling, and he goes over to Connor and tries to secure Connor's dropping out of this election, but Willa is sort of like stepping up as, you know, Connor's wife and saying... they're not keen to drop out because of all he's put into this. Mm-hmm. All the money. I mean, we've heard him talking about the figures. He was thinking about sinking another $100 million into this deal.
Yeah.
And Roman loses his shit. He says everyone in the room thinks Connor is a fucking joke. Kendall is like standing behind Roman and tries to kind of settle him down, but Roman brushes him off. And Connor's like, look, there's one person here who doesn't think I'm a joke. That's who I'm going to listen to. He's obviously referring to Willa. But it's just another kind of unhinged moment between this group. And then the funniest part of it is that Mattson is sitting right behind this couch on the windowsill, taking it all in.
Yeah.
And as like Connor gets up to leave, he's like, very nice to meet you, sir. You have my vote 100%, which is of course hilarious because he does not have a vote. He's not an American citizen. But just good stuff here. And I mean, just that look in Roman's eye that he's kind of coming unhinged. It was almost like, I thought about it more. I was like, what is the play here for Rome? Well, I think there's a very good chance he gets booted out of this company as a result of what he has done and what's going on with Jerry. And if he can pull this off with Connor, at least he might get a spot in Mankin's crew, right?
Yeah, yeah. And yes. Yeah, or something. I think that he wants to maintain the link to Mankin and just pull as many strings as he possibly can to put them in the right place. And I think he still believes that they can potentially hold on to Waystar too. I think that's still in the back of his mind as he
I just think this conversation with Jerry kind of put him in a spot where he's looking at it on paper and like he might be fucked here.
Yeah, things could go really, really south.
Yeah, I don't think even if they get the deal done with Jerry in a way that doesn't affect him public, reputation wise, the company is not going to be happy
that he
has caused them to spend hundreds of millions of dollars.
On a settlement
losing
package, basically
legal talent.
Yeah,
right?
Totally fair. And then this was just another, there's something happening here, and I hope by the end of the season I've got my thoughts just a little bit more like dialed in and articulated. But like, you know, I think there's long been a question of, can any of these kids be a Logan?
Yeah.
Right. Does that even make sense? Can you do that? And I think like more and more the answer is that nobody else is Logan. Like, that was the guy that could do this, and it breaks everybody else to even try. Because your kind of options are either to like fully commit yourself and fully break yourself to be that, or like what I think that we're kind of seeing with Connor here, or is that you can actually like just stay out of it and commit to something else and to like accept love maybe. And to just like have have real moments and a real relationship and like listen to the people around you that love you and be so much better for it. Because like when he says no and when he delivers that line about like actually listening to Willa, it's like the first time that I think anybody on the show has ever listened to just sound advice from somebody with their head screwed on straight.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, and so I thought that was very powerful. And on the other side of it, we're watching Roman try to do something that Logan would have been able to do in 2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
If Logan had come in and said, Connor, you're out, Connor would have been out. You know, and it's the same thing that we see with Kendall trying to make the deal trying to wheel and deal with Nate and basically like not being able to really effectively create these deals. Like, he, you know, he's got the words, he's got the strategy, he's got the name.
Just can't quite put it together.
But he just doesn't have the weight. He doesn't have the gravity. Because it's not built, it's not earned, it's missing something.
Yeah, it's that entitlement, so, like, man. People sniff it out.
But Mattson, as we're seeing, like, doesn't really have it either.
So right. I think that's saying a lot about sort of the new generation of power players, right?
Totally. And that's another thing that I would add is that it's also an era thing, right? Like, Logan was a dinosaur and a dying breed at that, because it doesn't exist anymore. You can't have any more of those.
Yeah. An immigrant who came to America when America was still young, sort of, and helped shape it into what it is today, right? Like, he's a totally different type of human being than his three dipshit kids who inherited massive wealth and have never done anything actually meaningful with their lives.
Yeah, and you think about what Nate says, is that, like, you know, I'm not Gil, you're not Logan, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's another kind of, like, piece of what I think is, you know, the piece of the message is, piece of what's being signaled here is that, like, the fewer Logans that there are, that's actually a good thing. Despite how much of a shit show this all is, despite nobody being able to, like, get their ducks in a row and wield control, like, that is a good thing. Less power, basically. More of a spread.
Yeah, less centralized power, right?
Is positive for everybody.
I thought that was one of the biggest lines in the episode that kind of slides right by you when Nate says that. Like, I'm not Gil, you're not Logan, and that's a good thing. Like, be you, right? Like, don't try to be your fucking dad, because you can't, almost, right? And your dad maybe wasn't such a great human being when it was all said and done.
And notably, two old guys on totally opposite sides of the political spectrum who were essentially, like, not aspiring to be. Right.
Yeah. And yet the fact that those dudes were in cahoots and they're acknowledging this relationship that existed between them is also really interesting, too, which we saw some of that earlier seasons. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Mattson, sitting on the windowsill, goes on to shit all over New York City. He calls it Second World. He calls it Legoland. And he and Kendall exchange barbs in front of everyone. Things escalate. Kendall references the issues Mattson has with India. Mattson references Kendall's meaty predictions, as he calls them, with regard to Living Plus. So, and then Kendall says Mattson's numbers are literally unbelievable. And Mattson says Kendall's numbers are gay. And Kendall says, that's kind of homophobic, man. And Mattson's like, just let the wave hit you. Float out. And, like, basically saying the money is here, like, the money is coming in, it's going to wash you away, right? They've kind of used that analogy repeatedly in this season. And Kendall says, I think I am the wave, though. Just this, like, weird back and forth where both guys are kind of being like, I know you're full of shit and you don't have what you say you do, and I'm going to find a way to call you on it. And then it ends with them, like, hugging it out, bitch.
I love the deal. Love the deal.
And both saying, love the deal.
Love the deal.
Back and forth. over and over.
Everything is chosen for a reason on this show, and I noticed that Mattson was wearing some weird basketball shoes last night.
Okay.
Nikes. But I couldn't place them. They looked kind of dated. They looked a little like maybe a year or two old, or just something not, like, they looked very basketball specific. Come to find out on Succession Fashion Instagram account this morning that they are Kyrie's, and I don't think that's an accident after the anti-Semitic tweet.
Wow.
The Holocaust referencing tweet that Mattson dropped in the previous episode, and kind of the strange, alternative, I'll say, worldview that Mattson seems to have.
Yeah.
And that kind of lines up with some some Kyrie things, doesn't it?
That is wild.
And I don't think that's an accident.
No, absolutely no accident.
That's an accident.
No, because, look, Kyrie's are not widely considered to be like a piece of fashion.
No, they're
for
more
the most part.
Straight up basketball shoes.
Yeah, yeah. For hoopers. So the fact that he would go out of his way to buy these because Kyrie was, he got into some hot water spreading around an Amazon distributed documentary with some interestingly problematic worldviews. that's fucking great.
Some thoughts
on
the Holocaust or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, then. Interesting. Good stuff there.
Yeah.
So
love the deal.
Love the deal. Tom tells Shiv that he's going to sleep because he's exhausted and because he's sick of walking around this party at his own house and hearing about how he's going to be shit canned. and he steps outside, frustrated. Shiv follows him, and this is where we get one of the most explosive scenes in Succession history. Shiv tells Tom she's worried. Like, he basically is like, I'm extremely upset. Walks outside like, come and talk to me, sort of. And she comes outside and is like, here's what I've got going on. She tells him that she's worried that she nailed herself to the Matson cross and maybe he turned out to be bullshit, that she's fucking her family for this, and she's scared.
Which Tom warned her about less than an episode ago.
He very much did. Tom says that there are 40 of maybe the most important people in America at this party, and she has just walked around all evening telling them all that he's going to get fired. Shiv brings up the scorpion, calls Tom a snake, says something to the extent of, here's a snake for a necktie, Tom. Yeah. Why aren't you laughing?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Tom suggests they clear the air, which made me hold my breath. And rightfully so, because he ends up calling her a very selfish person, says that she shouldn't have even married him. Shiv says she said yes to his proposal because she was at her lowest ebb and her dad was dying and she didn't want to hurt Tom's feelings. And Tom says, oh yeah, you really had my feelings in mind when you ran off to fuck the phone book. Shiv calls him a conservative hick, says Tom was only with her to get power, that he was fucking her for her DNA, that his whole family is striving and parochial, which I had to look up, and that he betrayed her. Like, they're just back and forth, the most intense version of this that we've seen so far.
Yes,
it's
yes.
Bitey, but with words, really hurtful. And Tom says Shiv was going to see him sent to fucking prison. And when he said that, I was like, that's right, she was. What's wrong with you? Why would you let your husband go to prison? But then we'll get to the counter in a second. But he says that she fobbed him off with the undrinkable wine he's been pushing all night. And that she won't have his baby because she never thought she'd be with him for more than like 4 fucking years. Shiv says Tom offered to go to jail, at which point it clicked for me. Oh, yeah, he did. That was his idea. He was like, your dad needs a fall guy. I can be the fall guy and shoot up the ranks essentially when I get out, right? That was his fucking strategy, not hers. She just went with it once he, you know, threw it out there because she doesn't really give that much of a shit about him and she was already trying to have an open marriage anyway, so what difference does it make? But she says that he's servile, that he's a masochist and can't even take it. Tom tells her he thinks she's incapable of love and that she is maybe not a good person to have children, which is obviously hurtful.
Yes.
Because she is with child currently.
Which she still has not told to anybody.
No. Shiv says that Tom took away the last 6 months she could have had with her dad and that he sucked up to Logan and cut her out. All of which is a fair argument too. And Tom says, it's not my fault that you didn't get his approval. And Shiv says she doesn't even like Tom, doesn't care about him, says, quote, you don't deserve me and you never did. And then she heads inside. I thought Tom was going to throw himself off the balcony here. I was legitimately concerned.
I used the word earlier to describe the ambition of Greg the Egg, but this was just incredibly raw, you know, like.
It was so fucked up, though.
Really, really, really cutting and just vicious and sad.
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the things that you know, you learn when you get into a long-term relationship or a marriage is that nobody can hurt you more than that person that knows you more than anybody,
sure.
Right? That knows you better than anybody. And that if you let yourself get into these, like, toxic back-and-forths like this, you can really, really fuck each other up.
We talked about this when we were covering The Sopranos a little bit, but it's like when you're with somebody for a long time and then, you know, whether you're in a long-term partnership or a marriage or whatever it might be, like, you know things about the other person and they are things that you never bring up and would never say and you just swallow and bury deep down because that's what it is to make the commitment and make the compromise and make the sacrifice and love somebody basically, right? And like, so when you start reaching for the things inside of that bag.
Ooh, dangerous game.
That is when you say the things that are not unsayable, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And when you're going through a marriage that's falling apart, that's when that bag gets opened up,
that's when
the bag
gets opened, yeah.
And it gets ugly. And we have to watch it unfold here and it's fucked. But yeah, I was legit concerned he was going to off himself. He was going to chunk himself over the balcony. I was just like, oh my God. Because he looks so broken by the end of this.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they both do, but Tom, you know, I still think beneath it all, he did love her.
I do think that too. You know, Laura asked me after the episode, like who I kind of empathized with in that situation. And my answer was kind of like, well, kind of neither of them, but
right.
Also kind of both of them. And I think she's like more Team Shiv. So those people do exist. Those people do exist out there. But it definitely felt to me like, you know, if we're weighing the scales, if we're weighing the love on the scale, basically, like who actually had more genuine affection for the other as far as like, you know, the relationship went.
Feelings, yeah.
Feelings and love and all that. It does seem like Tom had genuinely more of that.
I agree.
Even if his intentions were, you know, ladder climbing and gold digging at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I definitely think you can make the argument for Shiv as well. It's just like the thing for me that pushes me into Team Tom is that when I ask myself, okay, who started this problem?
Yeah.
If Shiv had never let him in for, you know, whatever reason she did, she's sort of been in control the whole time. She's the one that captained their ship, and this is where their ship is. So I feel like most of the majority or the lion's share of the blame, for me, in my opinion, falls at her feet for a lot of the reasons he lays out here. Now, that's not to say that in any way Tom is innocent. He has made some pretty tremendously terrible decisions to get himself into this spot too, right? But
yeah, and it certainly felt like this was the end for this relationship.
Oh, yeah. There's no coming back.
There's no real coming back from this one. But again, it's like, you know,
fucking Scorpion, man.
A lot of the things that a lot of the words she used sounded very Logan-esque to me. They were things that he would say. And then in turn, you know, Tom calls her broken, which I think, again, is like a massive theme, is that all three of these kids and probably Tom too, they're all broken people.
Yeah.
Looking to like fill some type of unfillable void, essentially, because of, you know,
because they're psycho dad.
Because of their psycho dad, and because of the way that they have handled that in their lives as well. Like not really confronting it, not really dealing with it, constantly trying to seek that type of approval.
Like just go to therapy, Jesus.
All of that type of stuff. And so I think that as we get into the final three episodes here, that's what I'm so kind of thrilled and also nervous to see is like what the final fallout kind of like does to each of them.
Don't you feel like people are going to die?
I don't necessarily think people are going to die.
I'm scared. That's all I'm saying.
But, you know, Tom says in this thing, in this argument here, in this, you know, in this back and forth, that Shiv will always be okay. And I wonder if that's true. You know, like she will be okay from a monetary standpoint, but is she reaching a point where if the Madsen thing doesn't work out and her brothers find out that she's essentially crossed them and torpedoed their own, you know, designs on killing the deal, like will she be left out and essentially left out in the cold with no real like business opportunity to do business? And can she really go back to the political thing now? So like, you know, what is the shape for her, right?
Yeah.
And then Roman is potentially confronting like a, you know, sexual deviant.
He's going to get fucking canceled.
Yeah. Assault charge, harassment, sexual harassment at the very least. Charge.
Oh, yeah. Definitely harassment.
Could very
in the
easily
here.
Get canceled. And then Kendall is this guy, you know, we haven't gotten to the Frank scene, but like he will never stop. He will never stop this pursuit of this one thing.
Yeah. Okay. And let's get to the Frank scene. So Tom goes back inside, tells everyone to get the fuck out of his house. Bedtime for Bonzo Barrett. I don't know what that is a reference to, but you guys can Google it if you want.
Bozo, maybe? Does Bonzo. He mean Bozo? No Bonzo.
No idea. And he's, you know, clearly, it's kind of, he says, I'm done. It's kind of the end for Tom, too. I felt like he was like, fuck it. Like, this is a big, big moment for him to just kind of try to throw everyone out of his house. Everyone ignores him, by the way, and just goes about the party. But this is when Kendall takes Frank into the coat check, tells him that Matson's subs in India are significantly inflated, and he suggests running a reverse Viking, running it all the way back to the original plan, which was that Waystar acquires Gojo, which is where we started when Logan first went across the pond to meet with Matson. they were trying to buy Gojo. And then Mattson ends up like finding a way to finagle the stock price essentially to where their, what is it called? The
market cap
was larger. So it made more sense to go the other way. He's trying to reverse that. And Frank says there would have to be major issues to pull this off, which Kendall seems pretty sure he's got. He also asks Kendall what happens with Roman and Shiv, and Kendall says he loves them, but he's not in love with them. One head, one crown. And so, yeah, I mean, that was...
You know, one head, one crown.
Probably the next biggest scene in the episode, or maybe, I mean, if you're looking at the plot across four seasons, the biggest scene in the episode is essentially that he's pulling Frank into this room, who he sees as his confidant still, and telling him, like, I think I've got a way to make this worth even more, which in this case, I think the old guard would be interested in, because if they can acquire Gojo, their stock price is going to be fucking crazy. This is a huge company that they would be pulling into theirs. I think it's the only situation where the old guard might support what Kendall is trying to pull off. Now, why would anybody in the old guard take Kendall seriously as a person who could do this? I have no idea.
Well, because he's Waystar Jesus now.
Yeah, he can deliver eternal life. Roman steps up and says he'll take the big energy spot at their dad's funeral. So I think it 100% we will get a funeral episode in these last three. There's no way we have talked this much about the funeral, spent this much time with Connor at the fucking morgue or mortuary or whatever funeral home.
Yeah, got to be nine. It's got to be nine.
I think it may be 10.
Or 10,
it may
I guess.
Be the closing, closing thing that we see
could
in this
be,
whole. It would make sense from a, you know. So the episode closes with Shiv looking incredibly shook in her bed, and then with a shot of Tom staring at the ceiling in his separate bed before cutting to the credits. And I thought it was just very interesting that the last thing we see in this one is Tom's face, right?
Yeah, I agreed. Obviously, he's been begging for sleep. He's so tired, and he's in bed and can't sleep, right? So it's like that you know, a lot to take in there. And I see two ways for Tom. I see Tom either being like kind of like our guy that gets out, that really gets out. I could see him, you know, putting down the tie basically and like and walking away. I could also see Tom kind of ascending to some other type of villainous level.
I mean, we've seen him do it before.
And I'm using villain loosely there because like nobody's really like the villain on this show.
Yeah, everybody's bad.
But could he swoop in with information that he has gathered over the course of the seasons and pull the rug out from everybody in, you know, in some way to hold on to all of his nice things that he cares so much about, especially after this kind of this final throwdown with Shiv that's really left him in a bad, dark place.
I thought that scene with Tom and Greg where Tom is like, look, I'm going to go work Mattson. I think you should consider doing that too, unless you're really aligned with Kenro. And he when Greg tells him, like, actually, I am going to go with Kendall and Roman, Tom is not upset. He's like, all right, whatever you think is best, Greg.
Yeah.
Kind of like it's good for them to each have an iron in the separate fire.
Sure.
Right? And I really do think, like, as I was watching this whole thing unfold, I was like, oh, my God, Tom is going to shift back to the other side and be with Kendall and Roman and tell them everything he knows about Shiv. Shiv is going to be completely thrown out into the cold here, as you put it earlier, and be in a bad spot where her brothers now are cutting her out, do not trust her. Who knows what the hell is going to happen? I mean, obviously, it's going to be a very explosive final few episodes here. Like, we know that for a fact. I really, really don't know. I feel like this one confirmed, like, okay, Gojo deal is not happening. There's no way Mattson is buying this company. It is just not going to occur.
Yeah.
Between the blood bags and the bits of hair and who knows what else.
And India.
There is no freaking way in hell. And now Kendall's got this harebrained scheme to reverse Viking this whole thing. How will we see that play out? Who knows? Is there going to be a funeral? I think it's likely. I think that you're right. Tom and Shiv are done. There was no coming back from this. We thought they were piecing it back together over the last couple episodes, and that scorpion was just the last fucking straw, man. You can't recover from that thing. So, yeah, I think they're toast. But obviously, Barrett and I will get into it even further later this week on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, where if you are looking for more coverage of Succession's final season, remember, we do an exclusive ad-free episode every week on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, driven by hotline calls from the Oystar Clamco board members. Subscribe on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles for as little as $5 a month to support the show and enjoy so much more exclusive OCC content ad-free. We've done 6 different Hotline Call driven episodes on Patreon for Succession so far this season. We've got another one this Thursday for episode 7, and then we've got 8, 9, and 10 remaining. Great time to jump on Patreon, and when you join, you'll immediately gain access to our entire backlog of episodes, including all of our Last of Us bonus coverage for season 1 of House of the Dragon, season 2 of The White Lotus, and our entire companion podcast for HBO's classic crime drama, The Sopranos, which you hear Barrett and I reference all of the time. Friendly to first-timers and repeat viewers, our Sopranos pod. So that's on top of all of our bonus coverage of Succession's final season on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. Please support our sponsors all season long. This week we have Maeve. Go to meetmaeve.com/dragon for $40 off your first order of amazing food for your dogs. And Athletic Greens. Go to athleticgreens.com/dragon for a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Links and codes for today's sponsors in the description of this episode. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at WR Bolin. Mr. Dudley, where can the people follow you?
Yo, follow me at Barrett Dudley on Instagram and Twitter. And if you've if listeners have made it this far, I wanted to give a shout out to Morgan and Jordan. Hope I got the names right. Two sisters. I was at this past weekend. I was at the Kentucky Derby in Louisville, and I ended up on Friday night at something called the Sherby, which was a block party.
Okay.
And I had these two lovely ladies come up and recognize me, and they didn't believe it was me. They didn't think it was me, because they'd be like, why would this guy be in Louisville at the Kentucky Derby?
Because you're not the laughingstock of polite society.
Yeah, and they had their friend, they had a scout come over and test me, and say, hey, is one of you do like a podcast with about oysters? And I said, yeah, I sure do. And so then they came over and they were like, they sent out a scout? Yeah, they sent out a scout. They said they loved the podcast, and it was awesome to, it's always awesome to meet listeners out in the wild, as I like to say, IRL. So thank you. Thanks for coming up to me and giving us love and giving us the good feedback. So it was cool to meet some of the members of the Clam Fam out there. Hope you listened this far. But at Barrett Dudley, and shouts to all the listeners.
All right. Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. Barrett and I will be back Thursday to further digest and discuss the next this episode, episode 7 on Patreon. Thank you all for being here today. Thank you for supporting, for listening, for watching on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles. Until next time, people are data.